Welcome to another episode of Purple Insider. Matthew Collar here and with ESPN's Courtney Cronin inside TCO Performance Center. What is up, Courtney? A crazy week, as always.
Never a dull moment with this team, with any team in the state of Minnesota. Honestly, it's kind of crazy that the Vikings, after the missed field goal, are now old news and very much buried news at this point, considering the Wild get Kirill Kaprizov here. Heard that's a pretty big deal. Not a big hockey girl myself, but I definitely follow along with the Russian phenom. And then, man, I don't even know where we can start with the Minnesota Timberwolves, but Jesus, I'm glad that we don't cover that team, because that is a that's a mess.
The happiest person in Minnesota is Greg Joseph.
Oh, my God. Like,
just off the front page instantly. And I guess I would say that when we think about stability of franchises and why the Vikings ownership has stuck with the same coach and general manager, even though there has been plenty of what the H with, you know, car accidents where deer are involved and people hanging off trusses and Adrian Peterson drama. Like, there's been a lot of things that have happened to this team, but they haven't generally been rooted in the head coach and the general manager. Maybe the Stephon Diggs thing, I would say, probably was, but that's more of a player who has a beef with the way his franchise is handling their offensive philosophy. It is not a general manager having an affair and being seen in public, slash also alienating like a very large percentage of the inside of the building. Like, we just haven't seen something like that. I would say the closest that we got, though, not the affair part, but the closest we got to alienating people in the building, wouldn't you say 2019 Zimmer at the end of the year, there was a lot of conversation
when
about
he and
like,
Spielman were trying to like distance themselves privately, but it became very public about who's on which side of this. And if this playoff thing goes wrong and there's a loss, one of us is going to get gone and it's not going to be me. Yeah, that was 100% what was happening in the month of December 2019.
Yes.
We all felt it. We all knew it. Those of us who were talking to people behind the scenes saw it too. It's just something that, you know, the infighting in franchises is like the one thing that like I see with this Timberwolves story. This happens in every professional sports franchises, the affair stuff included. And I'm not here to like get into like airing dirty laundry or anything on like, or I'm not saying anything about this team, but this stuff happens with every professional sports franchise. Do not kid yourself about that. The infighting, the debaucherous nonsense, all the BS that's happening behind the scenes. I mean, Gerson Rosas, the one thing I took from that story that The Athletic wrote about him blocking his number two from that Houston job, but also blocking him from coming into the building? What? Like, there's a lot of weird nonsense that was going on within that team that I promise you is going on in other franchises. It's just those who do a good job of distancing themselves from it or not letting it bubble over to where people are like, yeah, I want to talk about it. Those are the ones who can at least handle their nonsense, their off-the-field nonsense, and still win on the field.
Well, and in 2019, there was also the possibility of the trade to Dallas, which
yeah.
I believe was a
very real.
Because the next day after the playoff win, Mike McCarthy's the coach in Dallas. It was like the timing of that was not a coincidence.
The fact that ownership, the Friday before the game, comes out with a statement that says that they support, like vehemently support, whatever the wording was, Mike Zimmer and Rick Spielman. You don't do that if like where there's smoke, there's fire, and they
right.
just basically like tip their hand to what they were planning to do.
Right, exactly. So we have seen this, and there's also been things that I've heard about who has control over roster decisions and how, you know, certain people don't have decision power or like they don't feel like they have any influence or any say in what happens. The analytics department, I think, on the football side, not on the front office side, but on the coaching side, I believe has felt like they don't
sure.
have control. So these things do exist. And like you said, there is a balance here to who's in charge versus having a sort of dictator type of feeling to it. And then also you can't embarrass yourself in public the way that Gerson Rosas did. But your point, I think, is exactly right, that this stuff, it exists when you don't win. If you are Bill Belichick, for example, and you run the whole franchise, but you just keep winning, I mean, what can anybody say to you, right? But if you lose and lose and lose, which the Timberwolves have, and now the Vikings, see, this is the thing about going 0-2. is if we push the meter back a little bit, it's not just 0-2. It's 7-11 since the beginning of last year. You go back to the end of 2019, you lose to San Francisco. So now it's 7 of your last 19 games that you've won under Mike Zimmer. And I think this one in Seattle, it's got a ton of pressure going into it.
And I know that what's being talked about here, and most people, players and coaches, you ask, will say, yeah, we were a couple plays away from being 2-0. But the pressure they must feel to win this game because of what's at stake. You can't be 0-3 going into a game where you host Kevin Stefanski and the Browns. And if you're the Wilfs, that's the coach that you let walk away. You had every chance. We're talking about that Dallas thing and the trade rumors. Who was your guy that you were going to replace Mike Zimmer with? It was Kevin Stefanski. So you can't have it be a situation where you're 0-3. You give yourself no breathing room to do that. And you play tight. You play terrible. Like, it's a bad situation to be in. And when we're talking about early season firings and potentially a change at the top of this organization, if they're 0-3 and then soon to be after that 0-4, it feels very likely that something will happen. Either that, or you can just say that ownership, I don't know if you want to say that they don't care or that they're going to try to see this thing out or they're brainwashed, but like I'd be very hard pressed to believe that they wouldn't do something after 0-4 if it got to that point. But yeah, I mean, the mood around this team this week has kind of been, I guess, what you would expect. Almost, I wouldn't say delusional, but like there's also this like sense of, guys, we were right there. We were right there. And I get that because in many ways they were, but in many ways they weren't. And if you don't get out to a fast start against Seattle like you did against Arizona, but you let them come back in the game, that's going to be a serious problem. They're fortunate that they're at home. The crowd noise should be very beneficial for throwing the offense off and, you know, the headsets going out and everything you expect on the road. They need this game. They absolutely need this game because being 1-2 is a huge stark difference than 0-3.
If we go back, so I was just doing a little poking around here and talk about, like, have you been snake bitten recently? Last year in one score games, they were 6-4 and then 0-2 here. So 6-6. And if you even look at last year, you sort of made your own bed with Dallas because you had a corner that didn't want to tackle somebody. But then you also got a good break in Chicago that a receiver had a ball go through his hands that would have been a game winning touchdown by Nick Foles. You had, you know, some bad breaks, but you also had good breaks against Carolina and Jacksonville. You know, the Chicago one, you made your own bed by not being able to, you know, convert a final drive and that kind of thing. So I think that doing the whole we were almost there type of bit, I think that that works with a team that's young, that has potential, where you talk about, oh, well, they've shown signs. If you were the New York Jets and you lost two games by one score, you'd be like, okay.
That works if you're inexperienced. You're right.
Right.
Not when you spent $46 million in guaranteed money on defensive players who have been on good teams before, who have been good players for you in previous years, that you brought back, all of that stuff. Like, it just kind of feels like it was, like, again, like, I remember, you know, they think they're good enough. Are they? I don't know. Because it just felt like there was a little bit of delusion in that, where it's, they're trying to, like, almost talk themselves into believing that.
Yeah. Yep, that's exactly what it feels like, is sort of speak it into existence that the first two games were a fluke and that they'll bounce back here. Now, both of us think that they will.
Yeah.
My pick for this game is that the Vikings win by 3, that they get a big stop at the end or something of the like. On defense, that the crowd plays a major role in this, and that they come away 1-2 feeling like they have sort of saved their season and then go into another pivotal game against Cleveland. There's a part of this that feels like, wow, you're playing playoff games already, and this is very stressful to do when you
have
a tough...
Can you imagine they're going to do that over 17 games?
Right. That's why it's always tough. And there's no Jacksonville here on this schedule for the rest of the way, except for Detroit. But last year's second half schedule was easier. Explain your thinking, though, on why you are picking the Vikings.
Well, for starters, they're 1-point dogs at home. So I think the line on this game opened at 4. Or maybe that was Arizona. I know that the line opened up close when Seattle loses the game to Tennessee, and they end up, you know, kind of looking a little bit more evenly matched than the team that just beat the brakes off Indy in week one on the road. So I looked at that. I looked at a number of different factors from like a, you know, a wagering standpoint. I mean, Seattle is a team that in like six of their last seven road games, they've failed to cover. So like I looked at that saying, okay, is there something to that? Now, I'm not a huge gambling person, but when I'm trying to like pick a score, and I picked the Vikings 28-27 to beat the Seahawks. That was something I factored in. And like they've been playing on the road. That's a big swing to go from Indy all the way home back to Minnesota. Like that factors into it. Also, if this team truly is as good as Mike Zimmer is saying he thinks that they can be, you think about the teams that have gotten off to slow starts before. 2017, they're 2-2 at the first the first quarter of the season. 2019, they had the win over Atlanta, the loss at Green Bay, the win over Oakland, the loss at Chicago. Like, they started out, same thing, 2-2. Now, this is a different stretch because you had to go on the road for your first two games. You have a new secondary you're breaking in. And, like, I know that's something we've talked about. Well, why were there so many busted coverages? Well, maybe it's a factor of the secondary communication, learning to play together, the whole thing, combining all different styles of players together, whatever. But if they truly are going to turn around the season, it doesn't happen like 0-3 and then they start doing it against Cleveland. It happens this week. And I think that there are some vulnerabilities with Russell Wilson at this point of his career. It's not the same guy that you faced in 2018 or even in like the playoff game, anything like that. I know that they've played them a lot and they do have experience and they know Russell Wilson should probably be in the NFC North at this rate. But I think there is something to be said about the way that Tennessee was able to come back in that game and still run on Seattle that the Vikings can, you know, follow suit in that. So that's kind of what factored into my take on this. Like, well, if they lose this game, will I think anything different of them? Yeah, I will say, okay, they are a bad team because you cannot be 0-3 and make the playoffs. I just don't believe it, even in a 17-game schedule. This is as must-win as it comes. I know I said that last week. People are going to point that out. I'm sorry, when you are in this situation where it's coming down to one score games and you can't follow through, like you don't get time to figure that out later on. Because when you do figure it out, it doesn't matter because you're out of the postseason race at that point and we know it's going to be tight.
Right. And the way that Green Bay bounced back last week, I know it was against Detroit, but you just can't expect that you can get down a couple of games early to Green Bay in the standings. Now we'll see what happens to them. They got to go out to San Francisco. That's not going to be easy. Cleveland is hosting Chicago. So the teams that you're battling with could sort of keep you in the race, but the other NFC teams won't. And that's how it usually works is you get down and then everyone says, well, we'll just win these games or whatever. But there will always be other teams who are staying ahead of you, playing each other where someone has to win. You get a W. It becomes almost impossible. Now, here's the thing with Russell Wilson is that on the road, he is 44-28-1 in his career. Now, he's better at home, 55-18-0, but his numbers are still really good. A 99 quarterback rating when he's at home, 126 touchdowns to only 48 picks, averages 240 yards passing a game, 8 yards an attempt almost. I mean, he is a surprisingly good road quarterback. There are some quarterbacks who, I remember Drew Brees was this way, who is so different on the road versus at home. But I don't think Wilson is a guy who will necessarily be shaken by being at US Bank Stadium.
I mean, the thing was, week one, when they play the Colts, they're talking about, oh, like, look how good Russ is in the Eastern time zone. They're using all these, like, road stats that you don't think mean much. But you look at the consecutive number of wins that they've had when they are in those situations, and he plays in a pretty loud environment as it is. I know he plays on offense, but that place is still rocking with a 12th man or whatever it is at CenturyLink Field in Seattle. So he's used to playing in raucous environments. And I look at like the way that they've been producing on offense, how this thing has changed, new offensive coordinator for him, the same sort of system. I mean, Patrick Peterson today, I think kind of what's the word I'm looking for? Like compared them to the Rams a little bit just because of some of the principles and philosophies. And the Vikings have played the Rams before and played them pretty close in moments. So maybe there's things you can take from that. But, you know, I do think that there are things that the Vikings can take from last week's loss at Arizona. No, Kyler Murray is not the same quarterback as Russell Wilson. I'm not saying that like that Murray is a younger version of Wilson. I think they have a lot of similarities, but there are some differences there because Russ is somebody who will step up in the pocket and just drop a dime on you. But, you know, Tyler Lockett scares me. He really does. I think that they've got something going there, the two of them, and just the way that they're able to break off plays, which become backyard football, which become these like dangerous things. Like, think about how many throws that Kyler Murray made under pressure, and it didn't faze him. He was like 6 for 10, 140 yards, 2 touchdowns, and a pick. Well, you were pressuring him. Well, Daniil still got 3 sacks.
Right.
And those numbers are that good. Are they going to be just as good against Russell Wilson, even if your pass rush is doing all it can? It might be. So that's what kind of worries me when I look at them and just like, you know, all the things that factor into Russell Wilson being as good as he is. You know, he's gone into some really stark, like, you know, environments before that have, you know, they would shake any quarterback, and he hasn't been that guy.
I just pulled this up over the last 3 years. So, of course, he's a different quarterback now than he was early in his career. Over the last 3 years, the only quarterback with a higher win percentage and quarterback rating than Russell Wilson on the road is
Tom Brady.
Well, Patrick Mahomes. The answer to every question mm-hmm. for who has the best statistic at everything, it's Patrick
Mahomes.
Yeah,
and I mean, and he's tied with Mahomes for that 7-0 record he has against the Vikings against any one single opponent. Mm-hmm. That's the second best record that any active quarterback has. Mahomes has one too against the Broncos. Tom Brady is the one who has like a 9-0 record against the Falcons because of course. That there's something to be said about that. A quarterback who has your number, who has your card. And it's not like they haven't played them close before. I think back to that game in 2019 where they had those back-to-back drives where they could have won that game on the road mm-hmm. last year. They could, or 2 years ago, they could have won the game on the road last year.
For sure.
If it wasn't for, you know, that last drive where Seattle didn't even have to use timeouts and they just went down the field and absolutely dismantled your backup replacement quarterbacks. Cornerbacks, it's just wild to me, like how good he is, though, and just how well he does at picking apart this defense.
I think the reason, though, that I'm going to still pick the Vikings, despite all the stats that we just gave you, and it should be concerning, honestly, that Wilson is so good on the road that he's clearly not shaken, is that not only do the Seattle Seahawks not really pressure the quarterback, they also don't cover well. And this was the thing that they were super good at when they were at their best, mm-hmm. is they had just had a great coverage unit where you had Richard Sherman and Cam Chancellor.
Yeah,
and
the defense that no longer exists, the Legion of Boom, Doom,
exactly.
Whatever the hell it was called.
So just going by PFF grades, they're 19th in coverage, but they've had a couple of corners who have really been shredded. And it feels like as long as Kirk Cousins does not come out overly anxious, which we have seen in big games before.
Primetime game, technically.
The 2019 game against Green Bay is the one that comes to mind for me, where they caused the fumble on the first drive, and then I think Kirk checked down to CJ Ham like 2 times in the mm-hmm. red zone. Like if that version shows up, then change my pick. Like you're not going to win if the anxious overwhelmed Kirk Cousins shows up. But if he doesn't, this is not a team who's going to necessarily get after him, and it's not a team that's going to cover effectively against Adam Thielen and against Justin Jefferson. I also think that Seattle just plays kind of an antiquated form of defense that we saw actually
last week.
I mean, it just mm-hmm. feels like even Arizona playing the single high and trying to load the box. It's like, what year is this? Everybody who's smart in the league is playing 2 deep safeties and then 5-man fronts and doing all these creative things that these couple of teams are really not. And I think that when we've seen that in the past, Kirk Cousins takes advantage. Also, usually when he gets on a hot streak, he kind of rolls. And it's usually not 1 or 2 games. It's usually 3 or 4 games when he's won player of the month and things like that before. So I think that he continues to play well, and this is a good matchup for the Vikings offense, and that they can do enough on defense, especially since Wilson takes a lot of sacks with Daniil mm-hmm. Hunter playing the way he is, that they can do just enough on offense to get a win here.
I do too. And I think that Kirk, the way he's playing right now, we can't blame Kirk Cousins for the 2 losses that they had. I mean, yes, there are moments where he could have played better, but statistically, and we always throw caution to the wind here with like the passer rating, that's this, like 90 plus passer rating for 16 consecutive starts. I look back at that. So you remember what when that started was like the 26th or something of September last year. And I went back, oh, that's the Tennessee game where he had a chance to lead the team down the field for a fourth quarter comeback. And he didn't. He doesn't have the interceptions that he did last year. Remember how bad they were, 10-6 games? Like, he doesn't have one yet. The only other quarterback who's thrown more touchdowns without an interception is Russell Wilson this year. So Kirk's playing really well. I don't know if there's like a science down to like what that's, you know, what that is. Cause honestly, after week one, I was nervous thinking, okay, he's not going to play well at all. Like going forward, like he was really, yes, he did get them in position in getting them through the fourth quarter, setting up the field goal, getting them to overtime where they could have won that game if there wouldn't have been a fumble. But he's playing really well right now. If you get the version of him that doesn't look like deer in headlights and just like shook, like, that's going to bode well for you. I think that this will come down to, like you mentioned, because Russ is going to get his, even though he's not the let Russ cook version of himself and they've kind of gone away from that and they still run the ball a lot. I think Kirk Cousins will be the what wins you this game against Seattle.
So the Cousins and how he's played is an interesting conversation because it's a little bit of, in the first game, light the house on fire and then put it out.
Mm-hmm.
The same person is
lighting the house on fire then fighting the fire.
If you've seen the meme, it's like, if we could only find the person responsible for this, right? It wasn't just him. It never is just the quarterback in any situation, but there have been too many drives that are three and outs. The second half of the game in Arizona, same thing. And you can pin that on Clint Kubiak or Mike Zimmer or whoever, but throws were not made by Cousins. Drives were not led until they got to the very last one where they needed to go down and set themselves up for field goal position. So you could say in part that, like, even though the statistics came out looking good because of some big plays, especially the KJ Osborne one and a very nice touchdown to Justin Jefferson,
yeah,
very nice touchdown to Adam Thielen, that Cousins kept both the Bengals and Arizona in the game by not having an extra gear. But that's the reality of what you have here. It's like you don't have a quarterback who has an extra Russell Wilson gear, so you have to make your field goals and extra points, and you have to play really well on defense to win games against good teams. I'm not convinced that Arizona is a good team yet. I think they're okay. I think they're like a 6 seed. But now I think Seattle is a good team, a real good team. Now that they're not perfect, but they have a top 3 quarterback or top 4 quarterback in the league. So it's not going to take an okay effort. It can't take one of these, oh, the first 3 drives are 3 and out or 4 mm-hmm. or 5 and out. I mean, it has to be right from the outset, just like it was in Arizona, or then you start to get everybody in the building, including the fans who have seen this over and over again. As I mentioned, 7 wins in your last 19 football games. I think the fans get anxious quick when you're 0-2 if it doesn't start really well.
The season's on the line. I hate being that person, but it is. Like, it's on the line right now entering week 3 because 0-3, 0-2, those are big holes to dig yourself out of. If they're going to do it, they have to do it now because I think you're going to get people starting to get off the Vikings fan wagon, whatever you want to call it. Like, I mean, and that's not really what I care about all that much, but I think just for like the belief in this team, because think about like what you were talking about with like Kirk and the numbers and how good he plays in certain stretches. There is no October that has the New York Giants, the Detroit Lions, the Washington football team, a bunch of other schmucks that are in there. Like, it's a hard schedule. They've got Baltimore. They've got, you know, a Panthers team that might be actually decently good. They've got San Francisco. They've got the Chargers. Like, they've got a really tough stretch. Green Bay's in there. Like, they don't have this throwaway give me stretch where Kirk can go light it up and be NFC player of the month the way that he has the last couple years. It's a gauntlet, and they've got to prove themselves that they can handle that because they just have not in years past at all. So if you don't win this week, I hate being that person again to say it's over, but you can you disagree with me to think that it's not
0-3? Even if Green Bay and Chicago,
you
got
to be thinking there's
going
to be an injury or some sort of catastrophic something that's going to allow you to skate through to get in the playoffs if you're 0-3 to start the season.
Correct.
And I know the Colts did it a few years ago and the Houston Texans did it. And I don't care. Like, this team feels very fragile still. Like, mm-hmm. yes, they were 2 plays away at the end of the day. There are a lot more plays than that that they that caught the cost yep. themselves. Yep. But we will remember that game for Dalvin Cook's fumble in Cincinnati. We will remember that Greg Joseph missed a chip shot. But this team feels very fragile. If they don't get a win, I wonder when they start fracturing internally, because it feels like they're very close to that.
Fans are going back to stadiums, so you have to be ready with the best Minnesota football gear. That's why you have to check out SodaStick. I saw a ton of SodaStick gear around training camp. I expect to see it in the stadium as well. There are so many cool designs on hats, t-shirts, and hoodies for the fall weather, including the John Randall design that is extremely cool. There's also the Straight Cash homie Randy Moss homage, Can't Stop the Thielen hats, and a personal favorite, the old video game designs, the Tecmo fans will appreciate. Check it all out at sodastick.com. That is SOTASTICK.com. Everything is screen printed here in Minnesota, and I can tell you that the shirts are comfortable and they last because half of my closet is now SodaStick at this point. Again, that's sodastick.com, Minnesota sports inspired goods, and keep your eye out for our SodaStick giveaways.
If Chicago and Green Bay lose, it won't feel like the world is over, because it will look like Green Bay is every bit as vulnerable and Chicago might just be like not good. They're playing Cleveland at Cleveland, mm-hmm. though, so that's not an easy opponent.
And with Justin Fields starting.
Right, with a rookie, yeah. So, you know, but they wouldn't look so much as a real contender if Chicago's 1-2 and Green Bay gets beaten down by San Francisco or something. I think we would still say they're the favorite, but they won't look as tough. But if those teams win, if Chicago and Green Bay wins, and you are down two games from the very outset of the season, chasing in the NFC North, and no other team is going to let you into it, like they're going to fill up those playoff spots,
sure.
It will feel like, yeah, it's over. And then I think we go into week four, and we start talking about, like, is it time? When mm-hmm. is it time? What do you need to do here? And I guess what the biggest thing that would exist in my mind is, even if you like the people and you think that they're good and you think that they're stable, unlike the Wolves and so forth, mm-hmm. unlike some other teams, I think you'd say, like, how much longer can you do this, though, when you're getting the same results over and over?
It's the definition of insanity, expecting the same results, so expecting a different result, but the same thing keeps happening. You keep going to the well, and you expect something different. I'm not saying this team is not capable of coming back out of this hole. It's half the reason I picked them to win this week. There's a desperation factor here, whether they want to believe in it and talk about it publicly or not. You don't want to play that way because you're going to play tight and you're going to miss assignments, miss tackles. We've seen them in that situation before where it's game on the line and they just completely crumble. All the times they had to back into the playoffs, remember Indy 2016, Chicago 2018, all these moments that they've had, where it's like do or die time, and they died. Like, you know, Chicago last year and New yep. Orleans last year. Yep. I mean, the list goes on and on. But I think that they know what they have to do. It's just a matter now of can you rest this on Kirk Cousins' shoulders? Because I don't know with this defense. Like, I'm still not for sure, like, how legit they are. I mean, yeah, Danielle Hunter's wonderful. That's great. Had no qualms about that. Anthony Barr might come back this week. Big question there. Do you replace Nick Vigil with him? Because Nick Vigil's been playing really darn good. I don't know how you do that in nickel. Maybe you do. I don't know. The secondary is still a giant question mark, and now they're injured. So what's that going to look like? I think you got to put the weight on the offense, considering how good the offense was last year at home. Kirk's numbers were really good. Granted, there were no fans, nothing like that, but he looked really good at home last year. How does that translate to them needing to beat Seattle? You hope Seattle's defense is every bit as porous as it was yep. a year ago, because it looked like it in that Tennessee game and the way they let them back in.
Sure did.
No one's ever said Seattle's a great defense in recent years.
Right.
In recent years.
And I think that if you play the same team with the same coaches and the same quarterback over and over again.
Yes, it's like a division opponent.
Right.
It really is.
Yeah, there's a familiarity there that really screams out close game. And
screams out your failures.
And then, can you close it? And they haven't done that in these first two games. And
when have they closed out a game? Can you think of that? Like,
but it depends on, like, are we grading this on a curve? Like, does Jacksonville count? Like, no, right?
Carolina, yeah, I know.
No,
when, like, that's the thing. Like,
close
this,
out a game that
like
you
that
thought
matters.
Was big. Yeah,
I mean, outside of the wild card game against New Orleans, that they won a coin toss to win, like. I don't know. I think that's the thing where...
You think about this.
Like, Kirk has 3 fourth-quarter comebacks in his career since he joined the Vikings in 2018, one of which was that Denver game, I believe. You can do it against mediocre opponents. That's great. But Seattle's, I think, a very good opponent. The NFC West is going to be really tough to figure out who's making it to the playoffs when all four of your teams are playing great.
I think last year they closed out Chicago
on
at
the
Soldier
road.
Field.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was probably the last one that mattered, and they closed them out. Because even when you go back to 2019, there weren't many wins against good teams that year. I think Philadelphia would be the one, but that was kind of a kill. I mean, they just sort of ran over Philadelphia. So was there a close game in 2019? I'm looking right now. Denver?
That's the only one.
But not a good team. Not a good team.
Correct.
You shouldn't have been down 20 points in that game. I mean, that is the thing that is got to be so frustrating for Vikings fans, is that over these last few years, they just, every time they have an opportunity sort of right there to show that there's something, show that there's something there, show that they can close out a big game, win a big game. It just has not happened. It has not happened since 2017, really, with this team. There's the occasional big win, but, I mean, not that many of them, though.
Correct.
And this right here, I think if you're going to say the season is different, this year is different, those first two games were flukes, this year is different than last year, then, because the defense hasn't been different than last year at the start of the season, so this year is different. This is the win you get to prove that it's different. Mm-hmm. And then you can go forward and see where you could take this. But if you don't get this win, there is no convincing anybody that anything is different.
Correct. No, I completely agree, because A, it's the same result it's been the last 2 weeks. There's no turning point at that point.
Right.
Because I think Cleveland will end up beating Chicago this weekend. I still think Cleveland, even in that loss to Kansas City in week one, they're a playoff favorite for me. And the drama that's going into that game, you want to like try to get it, like try to right the ship and do everything else when you're dealing with all the ancillary nonsense that comes with Kevin Stefanski coming back to town.
Yep.
You know, Mike Zimmer, you want to, you know, beat the guy that, you know, walked out of here and became head coach of the year in year one. And, you know, you've heard the noise. You heard that they wanted him over you. Like, come on. That's like, that's too much. And if you don't get it right this week, I think that they are doomed in week four.
Let's close out this way. Is what surprised you most in the NFL so far through 2 weeks?
I mean, the injuries suck. Like, the quarterback injuries are just not fun to you know, deal with. I mean, we're talking about, like, Tua and then Carson Wentz, who I mean, that's not a surprise to me. Oh, the guy can't stay healthy. He hasn't stayed healthy since he was drafted. Whatever. I'd say, honestly, it's probably the Dallas Cowboys.
You think because they've looked good?
Yeah, and it's not that like I don't believe in their offense. I do. It's that they won in spite of like losing their best defensive player. Dak went down and beat Tom Brady, like almost beating Tom Brady.
Yes.
Excuse me. Yeah,
Dak played incredibly well in the game.
Yeah,
but yes,
and
almost
like
beat Tom Brady.
In like got so close there with like as bad as they looked in moments, still came back and they win last week. I think that. Not that the NFC East, not that I really had any sort of belief in any of the other teams. I do think Washington, and I have said that I thought Washington could probably win that division. The Cowboys, though, like look legitimate to me. They really do. I just wonder, like, you know, when we talk about that October 31st game, mm-hmm. when they play the Vikings at US Bank Stadium, what version of them are you getting? Are you getting a team that looks like a Super Bowl contender? Or are you getting a team that, like, eh, they made it through like weeks like 3 through 6 and they look terrible and they're back to earth and the offense can't carry the weight. Like, what do they look like? But no, of any team that surprised me, that's probably one of them. I'm not surprised that Kansas City lost last week, by the way. I'm not. I think that they were due for that. I thought that like the confidence that John Harbaugh has in Lamar Jackson and just like the way that they went down and won that game, that was impressive. And I was not surprised by that.
Also, I guess some of the risk taking from Mahomes was bound to bite him occasionally.
Sure.
And that happened. He had sort of Jameis
human.
Winston
he's
moment.
He's not mortal.
Right.
Or he is
immortal.
Immortal.
Not moral would be maybe what happened with the Wolves. Anyway, so I was just going to say the Raiders for me have just looked great. And I think that that's
They got away with one in the first game, of course, but
talk about a winner or make or break season for them.
Yeah, I think that like Derek Carr has really looked like a franchise quarterback, and I don't know if I've thought that since he had the 12-4 season, but even then it was a lot of checkdowns. He's been really aggressive this year, and if he keeps that up, that could turn into a big surprise in that division that they might even have a chance to win it. And Atlanta being a complete joke is not something I thought was going to happen. I thought
they
would change.
Do you think they beat the Giants this week?
I don't know.
I don't. I actually think the Giants will win that game, which is crazy to think that like Atlanta and all of its new stuff and new changes. And
I thought it would work.
Like I thought it would work. I thought Kyle Pitts was supposed to be this like super great player.
And I mean, we'll see if they improve. But I thought that like the coaching was a big issue. And wow, through 2 weeks, just like not good. And their defense is still horrid. So I think the Giants win that game, too. Anyway, well, we'll see how this one goes, and we'll talk next week, and we'll either be talking about how the season once again rests on Cleveland, or we'll be talking about all the hot seats. Those are the only two outcomes, unless there's a tie, and then I'll just...
We won't do a podcast.
I don't know.
A tie.
We'll turn on the recorder and just be like, I don't know. Do you know? No.
You have to get blank noise for 40 minutes.
The weirdest feeling ever walking out of a stadium was the tie in Green Bay.
Oh, my
where
God.
People like,
I didn't know what to do. I was like... It's like, wait, we changed the overtime rules? Well, when did that happen?
Yeah. I felt like Donovan McNabb. Wait, it's over? Okay, so we'll see how it goes, and we'll get together again next week. Thank you for your time.